Welcome into the Call It Podcast, powered by CLNS Media. Alex Barth, along with Alex Lebowitz, recording on the evening of Tuesday, April 9th. And Lebowitz, this should be a fun show, because as you told me before we came on the air, you're feeling a little loopy today. I haven't eaten yet today, so this is going to be a good time.
It will be. Yeah, I'm tired, man. I went to New York City this weekend, and I'm still recovering. You get back into the grind, even though I had the full 5-day week last week. I'm still kind of readjusting. So, if I sound a little out of it today, it's because I am.
And I'll be in New York City next weekend. Funny coincidence on that.
Oh, there you go.
I want to talk about the playoffs, though. NHL playoffs. Those are coming up. Bruins start Thursday night at the Garden against Toronto. And I'm feeling good about this team. I really am. And it's really because of something Bruce Cassidy said, I think, yesterday. He came out and said straight up, if Tuukka struggles, Yaroslav Halak's ready to go. And he's ready to help this team out. And we kind of talked about it throughout the year. Will Rask be rested? How do you balance that? But I'm really happy to hear. I didn't think we were going to hear this. I'm really happy to hear that going into the playoffs, Halak's still going to play a role. I think that's huge. I think that's a major difference from the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's something you haven't seen. Right? I mean, when the Bruins make the postseason, they had their solidified starting goalie in net, and that's the guy they kind of ride or die with. This year, you had a split time pretty much between Halak and Rask, so Cassidy has that luxury. We'll see, though. Will Tuukka Rask be up for the challenge? All I know is the past couple months of the season, he wasn't, amazing. He kind of struggled a little bit, and Halak had the advantage in that regard. When it comes to the postseason, that's a different time of the year. Rask has shown us in past postseasons that he is able to perform at that level, at a decent level, at that stage. So we'll see. But I do like the way that Cassidy is coaching this team, is managing this team. He's got a backbone, and that's refreshing to see.
No, and he's very upfront about everything. He doesn't play favorites. Another example of that, right? David Backes. $6 million a year, veteran. Claude would have played him 10 times out of 10. Sounds like he's not, at least to start, is not going to be a part of their game plan for this series. Cassie's going with some of the kids. That's encouraging as well. I think regardless of what people make, what their experience is, all that, Cassie's going to put the best lines out there to help him win the game. And that's absolutely something we did not get under Claude Julien. So, yeah. And now that this is nothing new. We've seen it in the past, but now that we're a couple of years into Cassidy's era and there's more players that he's sort of come up with, it's really starting to be prevalent, and you're seeing how much of a difference it makes.
Oh, absolutely. My only concern is, like, when you do have that veteran presence, a guy who was a leader in David Backes, and he's openly saying, he's not going to do as much for us as we initially anticipated. He's not going to be as big of a part of the game plan as some might hope for. I just worry that maybe that rubs a few guys in the locker room the wrong way. The thing is, it's hockey, and I feel like that's the sport in which that has the least impact. Right. Honesty, and transparency usually goes a long way.
And sometimes you hear about it in hockey, certainly if you're looking in the right places, but there really hasn't been any of that from the Bruins this year. Whatever Cassidy's selling them, they seem to be buying in on it. Whatever, and he's a pretty upfront and blunt guy with the media, so you'd imagine he's like that behind the scenes. He seems to have a very good command of this locker room, which, again, is huge.
And it definitely helps that you have a good mix of young and veteran guys. Yeah. It's kind of been a similar core for the past few years. And the one thing you can't complain about is, the personalities that are in this locker room. So again, I say I worry about that, but I'd really worry about that if this was, Brad Stevens doing it or Bill Belichick maybe doing it.
It's the exact polar opposite of what's happened with Stevens this year.
Oh, yeah. Because he's being honest, and it's right. Refreshing. And I think, if he's being honest to the media, he's being transparent and honest to his players, to their
face. And I think he's being honest to himself too, which I think you could say at times Stevens hasn't been this year.
Definitely not. I mean, I'm just sick of the button up answers from certain coaches and players. Unless you have a pattern, a habit of winning consistently. I guess you do have to answer those questions. And I don't know. I'm sick of, you know, the pre-planned questions. I understand it. Bringing that stuff out outside of the locker room might not be the best thing, but I do think it does set a tone. And when you're going through a postseason like the, you know, the Stanley Cup playoffs, in which really it's always up for grabs, having that type of temperament is huge.
And you've got the Bruins and the Maple Leafs in the first round meeting each other again in the playoffs. What is this now? 2 years? 2 years in a row, right?
Yep.
Should be a good series. For me, a lot of this hinges on what Cassie decides to do with that top line. Are we going to get the killer line of Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak? Are we going to get, you know, that I don't know, firing squad line, whatever you want to call it, that can just put opponents away? Do they spread the talent out? Does Pasternak go down to the second line to play with Krejci and Coyle? How are they going to spread that up? I've said this before. I'll say it again. Put talent with talent. That's how you win. Give me the three top players across the board, because I know Tampa is a deep team, and you have to be deep to beat them, and that's fair. I actually trust the Bruins' depth. I don't know that it's better than Toronto's. I think I said Tampa before. I don't know that it's better than Toronto's, but I think it's good enough. For me, put that top group together at least to start and see what they can give you, because defensively, I actually think this series sets up real nice for the Bruins. Zdeno Chara, I think, can still give Steven Stamkos problems. He's not what he once was, but we've seen him do this in the playoffs before, right? A couple years ago, he did it against Phil Kessel, where he just kind of shadows the guy on and off the ice. And if you can take Stamkos away, Auston Matthews is a very good player. I don't know that he is winning the team a series against the Boston Bruins yet. I think he eventually can. I don't think that happens yet. So I think for the Bruins, this all starts defensively, and then just, you know, bulk scoring on that top line and get everything you can out of those guys that you can. And the way to maximize all three of those guys is to put them together.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think the one advantage the Bruins have heading into the postseason is they're going up against a team that's kind of limped into the playoffs. So the past 2 months, past really month and a half for the Maple Leafs, they weren't very good. I mean, they were right around 500. If not, I think they were below 500. And I just don't know if they're going to match up well with the Bees. I think this is the series that you do try to mess with stuff and try to maybe make some adjustments that might pay off when you do go up against the Lightning. But I'm not all that concerned. Knock on wood. And that's why I think it sets up nicely. It stinks that they had to play the Lightning in round two. I mean, we beat that storyline to death.
I do want to talk about the format. But before we get into that, if that's where you're jumping, I got to do series picks.
And just before we get to that, I do think that this is still a good tune-up for that second round. And I'm, you know, people are going to say that I'm calling the series before it starts, but I'm just not concerned about it. I think the Bruins have played pretty well down the stretch. I think they've had a really good season, and they're going up against a team that again is struggling this year.
All right, so I mean, you sound pretty confident. In how many games?
I think we'll go six games, but it's gonna feel like it's a bigger victory than that.
See, I'm gonna go that's funny. I'm saying the complete opposite. I actually have Bruins in five, but I think it's going to be a very close five. And hockey's the only sport where you can have a close sweep or a close five game series. I think we go to overtime a couple of times. I think they're going to be one or two goal games, but I think the Bruins' experience, the experience of guys like Bergeron and Chara, puts them over the top. So I like the Bruins in a close five. You like the Bruins in a blowout six. That's kind of interesting. Let's talk about this format now, though, for a little bit, because for whatever reason, the NHL decided I get going to a fixed bracket. I like the fixed bracket. I wish the NBA would do it. It makes it a lot more fun. That being said, when you go to a fixed bracket, one plays eight, two plays seven, yada, yada, yada. The NHL does this weird thing where the top three teams from each division make the playoffs, and then two wild card teams. And, you know, the Bruins is the second best team in the conference, shouldn't have to play the Lightning if they do until the conference finals. They have to play them hypothetically in the second round. The Lightning have to play the fifth best team in the conference in the first round in the wild card Blue Jackets. So I know this is like cool to kind of crap on this format, but it's awful. It really is awful.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one sport it's going to work in, it is hockey, where, again, anything kind of goes. You see right. 8 seeds make it deep into the postseason. That said, it's not going to work in any sport. I think that it is a bad move for the NFL, the NHL. I think that you're pretty much worsening the product down the stretch once you get into, you know, the conference finals. It just doesn't make sense. It's punishing teams that have better records than teams that might not, depending on what division you're in. So this is something that will evolve, and hopefully this trend ends, or at the very least, maybe they change it. That's the one consolation. It's cyclical. Every single league is cyclical, and something's going to change. The dynamic's going to flip. Hopefully that happens sooner rather than later, but right now it's screwing the Bruins.
And I mean, it's frankly, it's screwing a lot of teams. I think it's screwing the Lightning as much as it's screwing the Bruins. It's certainly helping out, you know, a team like the Islanders. I can kind of see what they were going for. I think they were trying to mimic the NFL system. But the beauty of the NFL system is, one, it's not a fixed bracket, which allows it to work. And the top seeds get byes. So even if the wild card team is stronger, they still have to play an extra game. And the other team gets that extra rest. So to me, a wild card system, and I love that baseball went to the format they went to a couple years ago. You have to have some sort of bye week for top teams in a wild card system, because wild card teams are just that. They're wild cards. Just because they're the last team in, right, doesn't mean they're the worst team. Sometimes they're one of the best teams. So if the NHL wants to fix this, they need to institute some kind of bye or something, or reseed it. Because, like you said, right now it's just it's unfair to both sides. Take a series like you have with the Lightning. The Lightning should be playing the 8th seed. They're playing, I believe, Columbus is the 5. Columbus is the 5. They should be playing the 4. Instead, they're playing the 1. So yeah. Neither team wins there.
And I'm curious as to how this has affected ratings in the NHL. I'm sure the second round, the conference semifinals, have been, you know, watched maybe a little bit more than they have in years past. But it's just not worth it, because at the end of the day, it's worsening the product. And you said it. It's punishing teams that might be playing pretty well and might have the record to be beyond where they are. But simply because of this new format, they're being punished. So we'll see. I think there's been enough of an outcry from players in the league, from media and from fans, that the NHL would consider going back on it. But right now I'm not holding my breath.
All right. You got one other series you're looking at, you're excited for in the first round here, besides Bruins Maple Leafs.
I need to check. What do you got?
Hold up. I like the Sharks and Vegas out west. I just think those are two teams that both play a very fun brand of hockey. The Sharks have a lot of fun players, frankly. I still have love for Joe Thornton. A guy like Brett Burns is always fun to watch. There's a lot of interesting things going on there. I don't know that it's necessarily the closest series. I don't know that those are the two best teams. Those are just two teams I always find myself enjoying when I watch them play. And so they're playing each other. That's when it's going to be late games. They'll probably be on after the Bruins games, after the Eastern Conference games. So I will be able to watch a couple of those, and I'm looking forward to seeing that one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously going to be watching that Lightning Blue Jackets game just to see what happens there. There's not really anything I'm too excited for, just simply because outside of the Bruins, I haven't been all that invested. So we'll see what happens. I know that usually come Stanley Cup playoff time, it gets deep into it. It gets towards that second round, and then you start getting, it starts grabbing your attention a little bit more. But we'll see. The Islanders have been a team that I've always watched, and they've done well. Obviously, going up against Penguins, that could be a decent series. We'll wait and see.
All right, let's move on to final thoughts for this episode. Lebowitz, go ahead.
It's the Red Sox. There's not really much more you can say. The struggles continue. They're back home today, and right before we started recording this episode, they had two runners on, bottom of the ninth, Mookie Betts up with chance to bring home two. And they lost because he swung at a slider. He was a little bit early on. It's frustrating.
Stole home on them today. That tells you everything you need to know.
Chris Sale was not looking too sharp. He started out playing really well, pitching really well. And then it just fizzled out, and he started to just not look great. It's not even like they hit him that well, though. That's the odd part. I'm still not losing hope, though. This is the World Series, the reigning World Series champion team. And I do think that West Coast trip to start the season really set them back. I'm still waiting out. I want to wait until, you know, 3-4 times through the rotation to make a real judgment. But they're definitely being tested right now. And I do wonder if these problems are more legitimate than just, you know, a flash in the pan that I'm making them out to be.
I mean, look, I said last week they were my team to take a step back, right, in the MLB. I thought if any team was going to take a step back, it was them. But I said, they should still at the very least win the wild card, if not their division. I guess I'll say this. If they can somehow recapture what they did last year and play at that pace for the rest of the season, they'll still win 103 games. Now, that's an absurd pace. They won 67% of their games last year. But it's not over. The thing that does scare me is you can't win the division in April, and that's what they say, but you can lose it. And the Yankees, like we talked about last week, had their problems getting started, but they seem to have found their groove now. So, you know, clock's ticking on the Red Sox. They got to get this figured out. They got to get this figured out quick. They'll have an off day tomorrow, and then, you know, let's go. Like you said, the West Coast road trip, yeah, that can be tricky, but you can have two off days in 3 days. You're back sleeping in your own bed. You've got two really piss-poor teams coming in the Blue Jays and the Orioles. Like, get this thing on track. Give us something to celebrate Marathon Monday, because it's probably going to be nasty weather. We're not going to be able to enjoy the marathon too much. So, you know, the Red Sox need to give us something to celebrate there. They got to start turning this around. And, you know, if they're still under 500 by the time the Bruins and Celtics get into the second round, you're looking at a long, long summer of baseball. My final thought, one quickie, Stephen Gostkowski resigns with the Patriots. That happened right before we came on the air. That's good. I know a lot of people hate him. He's a good kicker. Deal with it. My real final thought is I discovered this song on Saturday night. I forget when. But Old Town Road, specifically the remix, is a banger. It slaps. Whatever else the kids are saying, I cannot stop listening to that song. It's everything. Look, I was into hill hop in college. You probably remember me talking about it. Everybody thought it was ridiculous. Oh, I found this genre called hill hop. It's country and rap. Well, it's here. It's here, baby. I was a little early.
Tragic.
I do not understand how anybody can listen to, like, you listen to it the first time. All right, you know, it's kind of catchy, whatever. And that's what I did. I was like, all right, you know, it's kind of cool. And I'm normally the first one to shoot down whatever bull crap is going viral. Whatever the viral du jour video is, song, whatever, I normally hate it. I was like, this isn't bad. Then, like, the fifth time listening to it, I couldn't stop. I could not stop.
Yeah, that's a strong disagree on this side of the table.
There's something wrong with you then.
No, there's not. It's my two least favorite genres of music, trap and country. It is horrible. And
it's more than that.
Did you like Limp Bizkit as a child?
Not as a child. No, I've actually been getting into them kind of recently.
Of course. It makes sense. Believe it or not. It's all trash. All this stuff is trash.
Okay, Limp Bizkit is different than Old Town Road, though.
No, but it's all just music that can't identify itself. It's like, are we this?
But
are
why
we that?
Is music? So that goes to part of the point of why I love this song so much. Why does music have to identify itself?
Well, because you need to. It doesn't necessarily have to, but when you don't,
that's a lot of stammering there, Mr. Lebowitz.
Hey, no, let me finish the point. When you don't, your song, your music, your creation comes off as disorganized, and it's like you don't even know what you want to do. So why would I listen
to your own thing? What if you want to do something that doesn't have a category?
Well, this says that's not this song.
That absolutely is this song.
No, this is a pop song that was meant to go viral.
Let me tell you this. I know you're somebody who likes
it. Sounds like a thousand different songs. Go on.
You're pretty anti-establishment, right? Stick it to the man, all that stuff.
I consider myself a skeptic, a contrarian at times.
So Billboard, which is like one of the worst things to ever happen to music. This song was on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, the Billboard Hot Rap chart, and the Billboard Hot Country chart. It was the first ever song to be top 20 on all three.
But doesn't this show you that people
let me finish the story, though. So Billboard all of a sudden pulls the song off the country chart. They said it wasn't country enough, and they made this whole big ordeal about it. This 19-year-old kid wrote this awesome song. Everybody loved it, and they're like, it's not country enough. So then Billy Ray Cyrus comes along and is like, oh, you want it to be more country? Watch this. And earns the respect of the rap community in one 30-second verse that his daughter's been trying to get in 10 years. So, I mean, and then Billboard had to put it back on the country chart. And then not only was it number one on the country chart and the rap chart, it was one and two on the Hot 100 chart and one and two on iTunes, if you count the original and the Billy Ray Cyrus remix. So, you know, talk about sticking it to one of the worst organizations in music. That alone is worth 10 listens to me.
Hey, I respect that. Don't get me wrong. I respect that for sure. But I think this proves that people have a problem with taking music, and all that matters is the beat and being catchy and being played at clubs in which there's dancing and whatnot, like a Mooney's type establishment, which is a trash, which is a trash establishment.
I texted our friend Sam Cooper. Hey, they might want to sponsor us someday. Don't knock them.
I will refuse.
I texted our friend Sam Cooperman, like the third time I listened to it. I texted him and I said, "Where was this song when we were at Mooney's?" It was all. But the other thing is, like,
you know, they're playing it way too often there now.
I feel like it's a lot of fun when it came on, like Trap Queen when we were there. But I was also, I listened to it on the ride home the other night, and I was enjoying myself doing that, just singing along in the car. Like, it's a very versatile song.
If it comes
a great message.
If it comes on my radio while I'm driving, I'm going to drive off the road. Like,
I cannot believe you are the only person I have talked to who does not enjoy this song.
I got no horses in the bed. It's so stupid. Ugh. Who has horses? Who has horses? A lot of people?
Yeah.
A lot of people have horses.
Oh, how many ranches and farms and this and that are there throughout the country?
It's a rich person thing. You have a ranch, a 10,000 acre ranch, Billy Ray Cyrus, and he gets most of his money from his daughter. He has a bunch of horses on his 10,000 acre ranch that was paid for by his daughter, who he was a poor father to, and okay, now he makes a song. This is 100% correct.
That has nothing to do with – what about like the cattle ranchers out in Colorado?
Out in Colorado? Those people are loaded.
You think so? You ever watch a show, The Ranch, on Netflix? I don't think so.
The Ranch with the 70s show crew?
Yeah, it's a great show.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think it's a documentary.
No, but it's – yeah, that's fair. I don't know. Look, you don't like it right now. All I'm telling you is listen to it 4 or 5 more times.
I'm not listening to it one more time.
By the time we start the next show.
I'm never listening to that song again.
That is such a – well, I'll tell you this. Next time we get together, all the college friends, it's going to be playing on repeat.
And I'll have earplugs in. I'll pull a Van Gogh both sides.
Or you'll fall asleep again.
I might, dude. You don't know what it's like waking up super early.
I think, I mean, between Mooney's and that and Coop, I think that's enough inside jokes for one show. I think it's about time we call it. Fair? You got anything else?
Mooney stinks. So does that song.
All right. Bad takes from Alex Leibowitz to wrap the show up. We'll be back either Friday or Saturday. Hopefully, Leibowitz will have better takes. Celtics playoff preview and some Red Sox talk as well. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. And check us out online at clnsmedia.com. For Alex Leibowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.